everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on diabetes when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, which was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season and multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush said that what Americans want is jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, or the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognize that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. There's no money in public business, and there's certainly no money in jobs, jobs, jobs. That's why I contend that it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance and learned how to collect the benefits of this old covenant contract, and to collect those benefits in real money, real property, like gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's what we call property instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn more about how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on my CD Home School for Adults, and while you're at it, order my free General Law CD package at the same time. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free. You can call right now. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of diabetes. Remember, diabetes is a fatal disease. It kills you every time. We just don't know when. It's going to shorten your lifespan, remember, by about somewhere in the neighborhood of 17 to 25 years, depending upon when you get it in life. If you're an old man when you get it, it's not going to shorten your average lifespan. If you're 75 when you develop diabetes, 75 is the average lifespan here in the United States. The average lifespan that's guaranteed by contract from God is 70 years, 25,550 days. 80 if you're strong. That's an extra 10 years if you've got a pretty strong constitution. Which takes us right up to average age, 75. About half of us are strong and half of us aren't so strong. Now, I mentioned to you last time in closing that there was an article here called The Diabetes Atlas, the Executive Summary. On page 15, they talk about this thing of young people. When you're sucking Cokes, you're not doing yourself any favors. And when you bring Coke or soda pop into your children, you're not doing them any favors. And soda pop is like the nectar of the gods. And you give a kid a glass of milk and you give him a Coca-Cola, and he's going to want to drink that Coke 10 to 1 over that milk any and every time. That's because it tastes better. I've often said, you know, if God had made broccoli and Brussels sprouts taste like a Hershey's chocolate bar or a York peppermint patty, there would be no disease in the world today. But for some reason, he made broccoli and Brussels sprouts taste pretty yucky. And as a result of that, all the vitamins and minerals, all the things that you really need in life for long life and survival, are in the broccoli and the Brussels sprouts, and they're not in the peppermint patty or the Hershey's candy bar. Not that I'm opposed to Hershey's candy bars or York peppermint patties. Every once in a while I indulge and I eat one of those. I haven't had a soda pop for many, many years. I kind of avoid the soda pop because if you're going to eat a candy bar, you can't hardly eat a soda pop. Remember, your body now can only dispose of 3 teaspoons of sugar a day. That's refined sugar. So if you could get all of the refined sugar out of your life, out of your body, out of your diet, you know, you'd live longer and healthier and happier. And it's not impossible to get all that refined sugar out. What you do is you replace it with something that's a little better. Now, one of the things that I do, I've got a milk cow here, see. And what I discovered was I couldn't get milk. You know, the land of milk and honey. I couldn't get milk at my local grocery store. Now, in California, you Californians can get milk, raw milk. And there's a few other places, I guess, in the country. I think down in Georgia, you can still get raw milk in some selected areas. So you can live in the cities and drink raw milk. But by and large, we Americans can't get raw milk. And so they've outlawed it here for all of you people outside the country. Yeah, believe it or not, in the United States of America, it's against the law. I mean, the legislatures have come down and they've passed laws against drinking raw milk. Now, they don't prohibit us from having a cow and drinking our own raw milk. And so that's what I did. I went out and got my own cow. And so I milk my cow every day. And so I've got plenty of milk. So I replace Coca-Cola with milk. And I like my milk in various configurations. And so I buy a little Ovaltine. Or I'll take a little decaf coffee. And I'll flavor the milk. So you can flavor that milk. You know, you can put a little carob powder in it, and you can have chocolate milk, and you can have coffee milk, and you can have Ovaltine milk. You can have milk in 35 different varieties of flavors, and you don't have to pay an arm and a leg for it, and it's good for you because it's got the digestive enzyme that you need in it. Now, here's a tip for you. You can drink all the pasteurized milk that you can get into your body. And it's virtually valueless to you because there's an enzyme that God has designed and put into milk that you need that's put in there by that cow to digest that milk. And that's why you people are lactose intolerant. Lactose intolerant. You can't drink milk. It makes you sick. You have reactions and allergies to it. Yeah, that's because you're lactose intolerant, and that's because you don't have the enzyme in the milk. Now, as soon as you drink raw milk, you can get over that. And when God designed milk, He designed nature's perfect food. When I was a kid, they used to call it nature's nearly perfect food. Not quite perfect, but nearly. Well, one time I read a story about a guy who had an accident. I forgot exactly how it happened, but he had his throat burned out. His esophagus was burned out and acid or something. And he couldn't eat. And he was faced with death, but he could drink. Well, he couldn't eat, and so he drank milk. Now, he was in his 30s at the time. He lived 44 years, and the only nutrition that this guy could get in him was liquids, and the main liquid that he took in was milk, raw milk. 44 years. Died in his 70s, 75, 6, 7 years old. And for 44 years, he drank nothing but milk. Now, that tells you that milk is probably got just about everything, all the nutrients and everything that you need in it. So I try to drink about a gallon of milk a day. I live primarily on milk. I'd say my number one diet, or the number one item in my diet, is probably raw milk. That's for all you people out there that believe that raw milk will kill you. Well, I'm 67, I don't wear glasses, and I don't have a hearing aid, and I'm in good health, and no symptoms, and I don't have any allergies. And I eat raw honey and milk, and that's because God gave us a land that flows with milk and honey. And I have replaced Coca-Cola with milk. Now, they used to call me the Pepsi Kid. When I was a youngster, I went down to the bar. I didn't care much for booze, tasted bad. So I wasn't a Baptist, but I didn't care much for whiskey and beer and so on. So when I went in to drink, you know, with the boys, I'd drink Pepsi. Pepsi is my favorite. And I became a Pepsi junkie. And I'd drink Pepsi-Cola and drink Pepsi-Cola, and I had pretty bad health. I smoked Camel cigarettes, drank Pepsi, and flew airplanes. Now, that's a combination. And I wasn't in very good health. I had colds and flu, and I was always coughing and hacking and whacking and wheezing and one thing. And I had pneumonia three times. By the time I was 18, I had pneumonia three times. So I woke up one day after reading an article in the Reader's Digest about smoking, and I said, my God, they've been telling me smoking's good for my health, and now they tell me smoking's bad for my health. And that's what you get from science. It's what you get from trade, commerce, business, and industry. All of these conflicting reports. You've got the religious guys, they're pulling on you from one angle, and the scientific guys are pulling on you from a different angle, and the medical guys are pulling on you, and then the food industry, they're pulling on you. Everybody's got something to sell you. Everybody's selling you something. And it makes all the sense in the world. The medical guy wants to sell you insulin because that's the way he makes his living. And the McDonald's guy wants to sell you a Big Mac because that's the way he makes his living. And the medical doctor wants to sell you his services, and the food guy wants to sell you his services, and then the religious guy, he wants you to put your offerings in the offering plate. I mean, everybody's got something that they're trying to sell you. The only guy that's not selling you anything is God. He just comes along and says, now, let me tell you, thus saith the Eternal, thus saith the Lord, this is the way this game is played. He's like the guy that's selling you the car, and he says, here's the owner's handbook. See, the car is already sold. You're already alive. You're already here. What you need is the handbook that tells you, well, here's the way to get the most mileage out of this car. This is the kind of fuel you want to put into it. I always use that as an example or as an analogy. Automobiles don't last forever. They're not eternal. Your body doesn't last forever. It is not eternal. It wears out. It runs down. And if you keep putting bad fuel in your car, you know pretty soon it doesn't run as good. It doesn't run as good when I was smoking Camel cigarettes. My body wasn't running as well. It was running. I was working every day. And when I was sucking Cokes, you know, Pepsi, my body was running, but, you know, with pneumonia and colds and flus and hacking and whacking and allergies, it wasn't running nearly at peak efficiency. It was running, but not running really well. And then one day I got to thinking about that, and I said, well, could you know, this doesn't feel good. It costs a lot of money going to the hospital with pneumonia and paying the doc. And I went to this doctor. I got to tell you this little story. I went to this doctor, Dr. Olson was his name, over in Fortuna. And I had a pneumonia. And I didn't quit working. I kept working, and I had pneumonia. And every week, in fact, I think I was going in it three times a week, about Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, or twice a week, two or three times. And give you a shot of penicillin, and this is going on now every week. This goes on for about 6 weeks, and every week I'm going in there two or three times. Old May's taking me over to the doctor. And he's giving me this shot. Never once did he ask me, do you smoke, son? Are you smoking? Why don't you quit smoking? And I'll tell you what tripped me up here. I'm going to the doctor for about 6 weeks, and he's charging me $5 a shot. So he's making about 10 or 15 bucks a week off of me, see? He never says a word about smoking. Well, the neighbor down the road, you know, he came over, you know, old Joe Toasty. And old Joe, you know, we're talking about my sickness and how this has been lingering on, you know, for about 6 weeks and so on. And he said, well, no wonder you're sick. You smoke all the time. Why don't you quit smoking for 3 or 4 days and your body would heal itself? And I was probably, I don't know, 16, 17, 18 years old. I don't know exactly, but... And so I did. I quit smoking for about 2 days, and the pneumonia just went away. But it made me stop to think. I said, what the hell was that doctor thinking about? Where was my paid professional? You know, the guy with the degree after his name. Well, Joe, you know, I don't know if he went to high school or not. Old Joe, just a dairy farmer down in Copenhagen Road. He told me, he said, you know, if you quit smoking for a couple of days, your body would heal itself. And I did, and sure enough, my body healed itself. Well, hell, my body would have healed itself 6 weeks earlier if I'd quit smoking for 2 or 3 days. In fact, if I'd quit smoking permanently, and I didn't quit smoking right then, but a few years later I did. And I noticed that my health improved very dramatically when I quit smoking. Now, see, you smokers out there, you can't tell the difference because you smoke every day, and your level of deficiency is normal. Your deficient level of body activity is normal. when you quit smoking and your body energy rises by about 20 or 30%, you'll notice the difference. And you'll notice the difference in your diet. When you drink raw milk as opposed to pasteurized milk, you'll notice your energy level is going to go up. And as you make these changes, you'll notice that there are positive changes in your body energy, and you'll feel better. And then you'll get sick less. You know, at the end of a year or two, you'll say, well, I don't know if I'm sick less or not. Most people, they get the colds and they get the flus and they accept that as being normal. That's not normal body behavior. I haven't had a cold for 20 years. I don't know what a cold is anymore. I don't get the flu. And when a cold or a flu or some kind of a toxic condition develops, your tonsils start to hurt. You'll feel it in your throat. So you stop eating. You fast for 2 or 3 days, and the symptoms go away, and you go back to eating. And that's what fasting is all about. That's why the Bible talks about fasting. You'll see animals do that. And animals getting sick, they eat grass, and they stop eating their regular diet. Dogs. You ever see a dog eat grass? That's right. Dogs eat grass when they get sick. So a dog will fast. He'll quit eating. So when you see a cow that's off her feed, that's a term that we use here in the business. She's off her feed. She's fasting. She feels bad, and she knows that, and so she stops eating. And in a couple of 3 days, she'll get back on her feet, and she'll start eating again. Humans can't wait. They call the vet right away. And when I see a cow off her feed, I take a look at her and I say, well, she's off her feed. Let's watch her for a couple of 3 days. Let's not call the vet. I've called the vet a time or two, but not very often. He charges $80 and the cow dies anyway, so there's no point in calling him. No point in paying $80 for a dead cow. She can die all by herself and you can save the $80. That's been my experience with vets. Now, diabetes in the young. Why is it today that we're getting diabetes at an earlier and earlier age? Well, diabetes is increasing in children and in adolescents in many countries. And the increase in incidence in type 1 diabetes has been shown in countries having both high and low prevalence, with an indication of a steeper increase in some of the low prevalence countries. Now, although type 1 diabetes usually accounts for only a minority of the total burden of diabetes in the population, it is the predominant form of the disease in the younger age groups in most developed countries. Now, at the same time, there's a growing awareness that type 2 diabetes in the young is an emerging problem with the potential serious outcome. And yet, our understanding of the worldwide burden of this disease is somewhat fractured, with many studies reporting on specific communities or ethnic groups. Have you ever noticed that? You get all of these studies. God, they're just study after study after study. And then one study contradicts another study. Now, that ought to tell you something about the science. Science. They don't have all the answers. They don't know. And if you'll think about that as it relates to cancer, the doctor says to you, we don't know what causes cancer. We don't know how to cure it, but we do have a treatment. And for $100,000, we'll treat you and keep you alive for 18 months. Now, here's what happens with cancer. An old buddy of mine developed cancer some years back. And when he was feeling bad, so he went to the doctor, and they looked at him, and they determined that he had cancer and that he needed immediate help, and he needed chemotherapy and, you know, all the cut, burn, poison. And this guy's name is Richard. And old Richard said, no, I think I'll pass. And so he went home, and he lived for about 7 years with cancer, and he finally died. He died. He didn't live to be 70, and he passed on. But he lived longer with cancer than most cancer patients live if they go to the doctor. Now, here's the numbers for you. If you get cancer and you've got good insurance and you go to the doctor, you'll live 18 months. If you don't do anything, if you've got cancer and you do absolutely nothing, your average lifespan will be 6 years. Richard beat it by one. He lived seven years. Didn't do anything for it. And his brother was just really down on him. Why did you do this, Richard? Why didn't you go to the doctor? You know, why didn't you? I told you about the old neighbor lady over here. Her brother got sick, and he went to the doctor. And so they doctored on him for a while, and they doctored on him for a while, and they kept doctoring on him for a while. And one day I was over there getting milk, and it's when I was buying goat milk years ago. And she said she had to go to the funeral. And I said, what happened? She said, well, my brother died. And I said, well, what did he die of? Well, they just doctored him to death. Just doctored him to death. Now, you'll notice that the Amish people stay away from doctors. Now, I'm not pro-doctor or anti-doctor. I'm not here to tell you what to do. But the doctors are like lawyers. Doctors make their money off of sick people. People that aren't sick don't have any economic benefit for doctors. People who aren't in some kind of trouble are of no economic benefit to a lawyer. That's why lawyers promote strife, hatred, and discontent. And doctors promote disease. Old Dr. Olson wasn't a dummy. He probably knew early on that if I didn't smoke, that my pneumonia would go away, and he wouldn't make $5 a shot. Now, back in the 50s, you know, $5, you know, was quite a bit of money. I made $6 a day. $6 a day, I think that's what it was. Let me figure it out here. $2.50 a month in board and room divided by 30 days is what? Now, I was making $8.33 a day, $250 a month in board and room. And old Doc Olson's taking $5 two or three times a week. So I tucked that away in my heart, boys and girls, and I discovered that women who take their children to the pediatrician constantly, American women are totally incompetent, especially at raising children. See, the first thing they do is they put them on formula. You ladies out there, your bodies are designed for nursing babies. Doesn't cost anything. Women would rather spend $100 a month buying formula than to nurse their babies and feed them free. Doesn't cost you anything to feed them breast milk. Cost you $100 a month to feed them formula. And the formula has 12 essential vitamins and minerals, and women's breast milk has 107 elements in it. I figured that God probably put 107 elements into a woman's breast milk because the baby needs those 107 elements. There's other elements in there also that they haven't named yet. Don't know what they are. Science is still learning, ever learning and never able to come to an understanding of the truth. You ever heard that story? It comes from the scripture. It's in Timothy. And the Apostle Paul, I think, is the guy that made that observation. It's in 2 Timothy 3, verse 7. 2 Timothy 3, verse 7. He said, these people are ever learning and never able to come to an understanding of the truth. That's where science is. And that's why you get all these conflicting reports and all these conflicting pieces of information. A lot of them, meanwhile, I'm not sitting here criticizing them. You know, but they've got conflicts of interest. Now, if you're a doctor and you're researching diabetes, and somebody comes up to you and they says, now listen, this is what we want in this report that comes out of here. It may not be exactly the truth, but you're going to give them the report because your grant money depends upon it. There's a famous story down here in Florida not too many years ago, down around Orlando, and there's a couple of investigative reporters that were doing a piece on milk, pasteurized milk. And they were going to report this pasteurized milk story on the local TV station. And they never reported it. Never reported it. And that's because the American Dairy Association said, if you put that out on the air, we're gonna withhold our advertising money from you. Well, hey, listen, that makes all the sense in the world. I mean, if you're selling pasteurized milk and it kills people, you sure as hell don't want some investigative reporting team from some local TV station reporting on your product killing people, now do you? And so, of course, you're going to withhold advertising. I would. I wouldn't advertise with somebody that was telling the truth about me. I always tell my students, I said, you know, the best thing that can happen about or happen to you is if somebody lies about you. The worst thing that can happen to you is if somebody tells the truth about you. Because you see, kids, if somebody's lying about you and what they're telling is false, you can correct that. But if somebody's telling the truth about you, boys and girls, you can't correct that. So the worst thing can happen is if they're telling the truth about you. People criticize me quite often, and people, you know, will sympathize with me, and they'll say, oh my God, listen to that Southern Poverty Law Center down there, just lying about you. I said, well, that's fine. As long as they're lying about me, I'm all right. It's when they start telling the truth about me that's going to hurt. And that's what I want to keep out of your hands. I want to keep the truth away from you. And that's the way the dairy industry works. They want to keep the truth away from you. Now, why does the dairy industry, why are they pasteurizing the milk? And why is the Coca-Cola company selling Coca-Cola to your kids? And why are you allowing your children to drink Coca-Cola and eat hamburger with 30% fat in it? Well, it tastes good, and the kid likes it, and the kid throws a wall-eyed fit if you try to get him to eat broccoli and Brussels sprouts. You know? Let me tell you how that works. Very simple. So you put the Brussels sprouts and the broccoli on the table. That's why my daddy worked it. It didn't take him very long either. And that was dinner. And I didn't like dinner, and I complained, you know, like kids do, you know. I don't like this Brussels sprouts, and I don't like this broccoli. And, well, I don't like this, and I don't like that. And my dad said, that's fine. That's fine. You're excused. You can get up from the table. You can leave. And I got up, and I left. Well, I was still hungry, so I came kind of wandering back in. And he said, no, when you get up from the table and you're excused, you don't come back. So I missed dinner. By God, I didn't miss breakfast. I didn't miss lunch. And the next night when I came to the dinner table and we sat down, and of course most of you people out there, you don't sit down at the dinner table. So that might be a wild new experience for most of you out there, but you know, in the old days we sit down at the dinner table, mom cooked dinner, and here's this, I don't know what we were eating, but you know, it's Brussels sprouts and broccoli and meat and potatoes and one thing and another. And I kind of complained a little bit, not near as much as I did the night before, but I kind of complained a little bit, you know, like I don't like these Brussels sprouts. And my dad said, well, here's dinner. This is what we're eating. If you want to eat it, you're certainly welcome to it. If you don't want to eat it, you're excused. And I said, well, maybe I'll eat a little of this. And so I sat there and I ate my Brussels sprouts and my broccoli and my meat and potatoes and everything just like everybody else did. And I found out, you know, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. And we didn't have Coca-Cola to wash it down with. We had milk. And so, you know, I learned that when you sit down at the table, this is what we're eating. If you want to eat, you're certainly welcome to it. And if you don't, you're excused. But you're not coming back. And boys and girls, I'll tell you, once your kid goes without eating, you know, for a few hours, it isn't going to kill him. He's not going to die. Your kid could go without eating for a week or two, and it wouldn't kill him. Probably do him a lot of good. And then he'll find out that that's the way this game is played here. Now, there's another game. You know, your children goes to public school. Your child goes to public school, and then he's got money in his pocket, and he's sucking Cokes at school and eating potato chips and pretzels and... And, you know, it's very simple. Very simple. You don't send him to public school. You educate him at home. And then he eats lunch at home. He eats the same diet at home that you eat. Now, of course, most of you people are probably on Cokes and pretzels and potato chips. And I'm not opposed to potato chips. I like potato chips. And I like pretzels. But you got to eat them in moderation. That means moderation. That means damn few and not very often. Damn few and not very often. And if you do that, you know, you can enjoy potato chips and a Hershey's chocolate bar, and your kid can enjoy a little Coke and give him a little instruction along the way. Son, your body can only handle 3 teaspoons of refined sugar a day, and this Coke has 9 teaspoons in it. So I'm not gonna kill you. When you're 18, you can leave home and you can drink all the Coke you want. But not here. That's what my dad told me. He said, but not here. Now, my dad introduced me to the nectar of the gods called Coca-Cola, and I thought it was the greatest stuff since sliced white bread. If God made anything better than Coca-Cola, he kept it for himself, and I'm not running them down. I'm just telling you that, you know, you got to make some choices. And so we adults make the choices for our children, or what's worse, we don't make the choices, and we allow our children to make the bad choices for themselves. Then they develop this habit for life, and then they can't kick it. It's like smoking cigarettes. You know, you started smoking when you were 12, 13, 14 years old, and then you couldn't kick the habit. You got to drinking when you were a teenager with the kids, and then you got hooked on booze, and you became an alcoholic. So if you train and teach your child how to use Coke, how to use booze, how to use tobacco, how to use potato chips, how to use foods, you'd be doing him a lot bigger favor. You know, that's what education is all about. He's not going to get that in public school. You can forget it. He's going to learn how to suck cokes and eat potato chips in public school. If you're going to teach him anything better than that, you got to take him out of public school. Let me give you a reminder here at mid-course that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School or The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, now we just talked about this thing of how do you break your kid into eating a little better, and it's called fasting. After he misses a couple of dinners, he'll learn that supper time is when you eat what's there. Now, the purpose of Chapter 2 of the Diabetes Atlas is to look at the global trends in childhood type 1 diabetes and to bring together for the first time the available epidemiological data on type 2 diabetes incidence and prevalence in the young from around the world. By the inclusion of such data, it is hoped to highlight deficiencies in the knowledge of the disease and also to promote strategies to deal with it. Now, the incidence of childhood onset diabetes is increasing in many countries in the world, with an estimated overall annual increase of 3% per year. Now, that means that it doubles every 25 years. 3% a year compounded for 25 years doubles it. Now, there is some indication that the incidence is increasing more steeply in some of the low-prevalence countries. Moreover, several European studies have suggested that, in relative terms, increases are greatest in young children from the ages of 4 to 6 years old. Now, it's very common for you mothers out there to be giving your children ages 4 to 6 years old infant formula rather than breast milk, and Coca-Cola rather than raw cow's milk. And I know somebody's going to say, my God, that milk is bad for you. Well, if it's pasteurized, I agree with you. So if all you've got available to you is cow's milk, you know, you ought to come up with something better than that. that pasteurized cow's milk is poison. But I'm not sure whether it's more poison than Coca-Cola. But there is some evidence that pasteurized milk in young children causes diabetes. Now, there's a definite connecting link between refined sugar and diabetes. Now, there's less of a certainty, but there's certainly a lot of naturopaths out there that have told me that diabetes is caused by or exacerbated by pasteurized milk. So tuck that one away in your heart. Going on here, talking about young children 4 to 6 years old. I'm not suggesting that you're still nursing them 4 to 6, but you got them off on a bad start with that infant formula. The predominant cause of hyperglycemia in type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune destruction of the beta cells, or beta cells, leading to absolute dependence on insulin treatment and a high rate of complications typically occurring at a relatively young age. Therefore, type 1 diabetes places a particularly heavy burden on the individual, the family, and the health services. The continued mapping of global trends in incidence of type 1 diabetes in all age groups is thus important, and in conjunction with other scientific research, and may provide a logical basis for intervention studies and future primary prevention strategies, which must be the ultimate goal. So let's try this, boys and girls. Start off with a young baby and feed him breast milk. Try that, breast milk. When this child gets to be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, do not give him any soda pop at all. None, zero, zilch. No Kool-Aid. And restrict his refined sugars. You know, all these Oreo cookies and all this good stuff, you know, when you go to cook, why don't you make cookies at home, Mother, and why don't you make it with honey? Instead of using chocolate, use carob. I mean, there's a lot of substitutes that you can use over here because, you see, in native populations that don't have refined foods, manufactured, industrialized foods, they don't have diabetes. They just don't have it. Now, I had an old doctor tell me one time, an old naturopathic doctor, he said, cancer is cooked food disease. Let me repeat that. Cancer is cooked food disease. The less cooked food you eat and the more raw foods that you eat, then the less disease you're going to have. And this is why juicing is so good. You know, you take your vegetables and you sit down, you eat them, and you get full. You know, you eat an apple and you're kind of full. Do you know, if you would drink raw apple juice, you could probably eat 10 apples in the form of juice. And you can get more of the vitamins and minerals out of the juice. So one of the things that we do for therapies, natural therapy, is to feed your body. And you feed it by way of juice. So if you're already sick, you've already got diabetes, what you do is you get yourself a Walker juicer and you go to work juicing and you start building your body by juicing. And you can drink carrot juice, apple juice, may know various, but make sure that these juices are raw. I had a sister-in-law died from cancer here a few years back, and she called my wife and said, well, would canned carrot juice be all right so I don't have to make it? And that's because canned carrot juice has no enzymes, children. No enzymes. It's cooked food. Anything that's canned is cooked. Anything that's cooked has no enzymes. Without enzymes, your body doesn't function well. And when you've got disease, you need to get your body functioning, so you need to overload it now with vitamins and minerals and enzymes and all those good little thingies in there. And you get that from raw juice, which takes work. Good health takes work. If you're lazy, good health is not for you. Disease is. You know, so get used to it. Now, if you're tired of disease and you want to get rid of it, then it's time to get off your duff and go to work. And that means that when I get up in the morning, I got to make some juice. I always make juice for my wife. I peel the carrots that go into the juicer that makes the carrot juice. And as a result of that, she's had cancer for 28 years and controlled it naturally, controlled it by diet. She comes from a family that had a high incidence of diabetes. She doesn't have it. She's 65. She's not diabetic or pre-diabetic. She's just fine. Everything's going great. She drinks a lot of juices. Now, she got off on the wrong foot when she was a child, and that developed into cancer. And you can beat cancer once you get it, but boy, let me tell you, it's a tough struggle. Tough struggle. It's a lot easier to avoid it. Now, you can help your children avoid it. You start them off on breast milk. Don't give them refined sugar. They'll never miss it. We have a girl 18 years old. She not only didn't get refined sugar as a child growing up, she's raised by grandparents now, see? She sat down at the table, and like all children, well, I don't like Brussels sprouts, and well, I don't like this, and I don't like that's fine. This is what's on the table tonight. You know, if you want it, eat it. If you don't, you're excused. Why our daughter, I can't imagine after age, you know, 3, 4, 5, you know. She sits at the table, she eats what's on the table. Wife cooks a good, healthy, balanced diet, and if the girl wants to eat. Now, the girl's 18 years old, she doesn't eat. She doesn't suck Cokes. I can't remember the last time I saw her sucking on a Coke. She doesn't eat refined sugar. I got a boy, 42 years old, he doesn't eat refined sugar either. Neither one of them have social security numbers. Isn't that crazy? They don't have social security number, don't eat refined sugar, don't have a cavity in their head. And they're not sick. I can't remember that girl being sick. To get sick, boys and girls, you got to do something. I mean, you got to get out here and you got to work at it. So when you see a mother taking her child to the pediatrician, you know, every week or two, I got to take my baby to the doctor. I got to take my child to the doctor. Oh, my boy is sick. He's got a sore throat. He's got this or that. Well, yeah, it's, you got a bad diet there, lady. You got him off on the wrong foot. You got him started wrong. You bucket fed that calf. You take a calf sucking on a cow out here and you never have any disease, you never have any problems. You try to raise bucket calves over here and they got the scours and they're sick and puny and dying on you all the time. I wouldn't waste my time on a damn bucket calf. I put the calf on the cow and then the calf can't suck all the milk out of the cow and I take the surplus. And that gives me a milker all the time. I've always got a milker out there milking. I've got 4 milkers out there milking now. So if I don't milk my cows tonight, ain't the end of the world. Calves are out there milking the calf. Now, the continued mapping of global trends in incidence of type 1 diabetes in all these age groups is very important. And there's a summary of results. It's estimated that on an annual basis, 65,000 children under the age of 15 develop type 1 diabetes worldwide. It's not very many. 65,000. But of the estimated total of approximately 430,000 prevalent cases of type 1 diabetes in childhood, more than a fourth come from the Southeast Asia region, and more than a fifth from the European region, where reliable, up-to-date estimates of incidence are available for the majority of countries. The smallest contribution, approximately 5%, comes from the Western Pacific, despite it having the largest childhood population. So the global distribution of childhood type 1 diabetes clearly indicates large areas or area-to-area variations, and this variability may partly be due to different distributions of risk genes for the disease as well as different distributions of environmental exposures. All right, so now there's probably something genetic. It's very prevalent in American Indians, Hispanics, and African Americans, more than in the white population. So when the scientists say that there is a genetic connection, I wouldn't deny it. I don't know. If there's a genetic connection to it, then you people that are black, Hispanic, or American Indian need to be especially alert to diabetes, minorities. Especially alert to it. Because remember now, once you get it, children, it's a tough one to get rid of. And you can sure do your children a big favor if you don't give it to them. And Americans are giving their children diabetes. We're setting them up for it and we're starting them off on it. And remember now, the 1 in 4, just take a look around the room. 1 in 4 of you in this room is going to have diabetes before you die. That's here in the United States of America. and there's a risk prevalence that's going up in the future. Now, this is the story worldwide, but here in the United States, they tell us that between 2000 and 2020, it's going to grow by 20%. 20% in a 20-year period, going up 1% a year. Now, that's an increase. Why would it increase? Well, because what we're doing is giving us diabetes, and we're doing more of it. We're drinking more soda pop, and we're becoming lazier and lazier. We're becoming fatter and fatter. And as that degeneracy envelops the nation as a whole, we come up with more cases of diabetes. So now, I'm not here to preach a sermon, tell you, you know, you got to do this, that, or nothing. I'm just a reporter. I really don't care whether you get diabetes or not. I don't get paid a quarter for preventing diabetes, and I don't make a dime off of selling you any insulin. So I don't know, you know, I'm a neutral in this. I don't have a stake in it. If I was a doctor, you know, I'd shut up about diabetes and hope that you come down with it so I can sell you insulin. And if I was some religious guy over here and I wanted to prevent it, I'd be preaching you a sermon about, oh, don't you love Jesus today? But I'm not selling that product, and so I'm not biased one way or the other. If you get diabetes, it doesn't affect me. If you don't get diabetes, I don't care. But as a reporter, doing an investigative reporting job over here, the subject of diabetes came up here the other day, and I said, okay, we'll go research it out, and let's find out, is it something that people need to know about? Is there some skullduggery going on? Yeah, the American Medical Association is not telling you the truth about diabetes. And that doesn't mean that they're necessarily lying to you. They're just not telling you the whole truth. They're not giving you all the facts. It's like going to the dentist, and he doesn't lie to you directly. He says, watch your sweets. He doesn't tell you, stop eating refined sugar. Refined sugar is a corrosive. And by the way, if you want to test this, take a can of Coke, pour it in a glass, and stick a nail in it and watch it for 6 weeks. Watch it corrode the nail. If you're drinking Coke, it's got an acid in there that eats the enamel off of your teeth. You know, you just keep sucking Cokes, you know, you just keep that acid on your teeth, and it eats its way through the enamel on your teeth, and then the bacteria get in there and cause dental caries. You know, that's what's wrong with refined sugar. Honey won't do that. Complex carbohydrates don't do that. So when you're eating carbohydrates, which then break down and turn to sugar, that isn't what's causing your diabetes. And then the sugar guys, they come along, or the anti-sugar people, you know, they come along and they say, hey, listen, you know, it's these carbohydrates, it's these sugars, you know, stop eating sugar. No, your body lives on sugar. Your body needs sugar. What your body doesn't need is refined chemical sugar. If you got to have a Coke once in a while, you know, like I do, you know, I haven't had one for maybe a few years now. I try to avoid that Coke. I like to have a little chocolate once in a while. Eat Godiva chocolate. It costs you $6. Go into the Godiva shop. When you got to fork over $6 for one piece of chocolate, you don't eat very many. You don't eat very many. Now, tuck into your heart here the different estimates of child growth, such as high birth weight and increased weight or height, weight for body and body mass, called your BMI index, have repeatedly been shown to be risk factors for childhood onset diabetes. All right, so your kid over here is sucking in McDonald's hamburgers, eating French fries, and sucking on Coke, the worst possible combination. And so McDonald's, they're not dumb people now. McDonald's, their business is selling Coca-Cola and fat. And so they put a little park in there. They put this playground in there. So your kid jumps up and down. I want to go to McDonald's. I want to go to McDonald's. And so to shut the kid up, you say, okay, I'll take you to McDonald's. Well, okay, that's marketing. That's merchandising. Can you tell your kid, no, we're not going to McDonald's? And the kid throws a wall-eyed fit. Have you ever thought about spanking the kid? I got to say, slap him up alongside the head, but then, you know, somebody would say, well, that guy's a child abuser. Why don't you spank him for throwing the wall-eyed fit? You know, it kind of works like going without dinner. you know, the kid didn't take very long to associate wall-eyed fit, pain and suffering on my butt, wall-eyed fit, pain and suffering on my butt, unless your kid's brain dead or retarded, and a little pain on his ass, and he'll figure that out real quick, and he'll stop. And then you can sit him down, you can get down to, you know, reason, logic, and common sense. 5, 6, 8, 10-year-old kids aren't in a position to determine what's good for their diet. Most adults aren't in a position to determine what's good for their diet because they've been raised by parents who have been raised by parents who have been raised by parents who were raised on McDonald's. But, you know, at some point in time, you might have to break the cycle. I broke the tobacco cycle in our family. I broke the booze cycle in our family. I broke the pig and fat cycle in our family. And I'm the only Gordon that's lived to be 67 in the last 5 generations. And they all died in their 40s and 50s, except my granddad died at age 61. When I took a look at the death rate in our family, now we didn't suffer from diabetes. No Gordon, to my knowledge, ever lived long enough to die from diabetes. We all died from heart attacks. That's because we chewed days, worked tobacco, smoked Roytan cigars, and ate lots of pig fat. Never lived long enough to die from diabetes. Now, I'm old enough to die from diabetes, and now I got another worry in life. So. All right, so there's the story on little children worldwide. And it comes from the Diabetes Atlas, Executive Summary. Let me give you that story again. You can get it online. It comes from the International Diabetes Federation, an electronic version of Diabetes Atlas, www.idf.org/e-atlas. I think if you just went to www.idf.org, you'd probably find it. All right. Now, that's for those of you that want to get control. What else have we got here? Okay, here's a graph. You can't see the graph, but I'm going to describe the graph for you. They've got a graph here that shows Hispanic, non-Hispanic black, others, non-Hispanic white, and then the total. And they show 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30%. And that's the number of people of the population that have diabetes. So when we look from 0 to 17, it's very, very tiny. And I mean, it's, you know, we're talking about less than 1% have diabetes. From 18 to 24, it runs around at 1 to 2%. 25 to 29, yeah, about the same, about 2%. Then from 30 to 34, it jumps up to about 3%. 35 to 39 remains around 3%. Then at 40 to 44, it goes up to 5 to 6%. So we go from 1% from 0 to age 40, and it goes up the scale to about 5%. But boy, watch it jump now. So for those of you who are 40 years old, I mean, when you get to be 40 years old, now you got to start thinking. Because from 40 to 44, it's over 5%. From 45 to 49, it's pushing 10. From 50 to 54, it's pushing 15%. From 55 to 59, it's at 20%. From 60 to 64, it's up above 25%. 65 to 69, it's pushing 30%. Then the scale begins to drop back because by the time you get to 70, so many people have already died from the diabetes between age 40 and age 70, the scale drops down. The peak is from 65 to 69, pushing 30% diabetes. Hey, boys and girls, that's 1 out of 3. Now it's going to be 1 out of 4. Everybody listening to me right now, just look around the room, count. 1, 2, 3, 4. That fourth guy over there is going to end up with diabetes sometime in his life. Diabetes is always fatal. Just remember that. It's always fatal. There is a treatment, but there's no cure. It's a medical problem. It's got something to do with law. You got to be breaking some laws to get diabetes. If you're a glutton, that's a violation of the biblical law. And if you're eating fat, that's a violation of the biblical law. But hell, you could be skinny and have diabetes, and you don't have to be eating fat and you can get diabetes. You can have a genetic predisposition to diabetes. Now, you could be eating sugar. Now, there's no specific prohibition in the Bible about eating sugar. So that's why I said it's a medical problem. But you can figure out, it doesn't take us very long to figure out, that when you double soda pop consumption and diabetes doubles in the same 20-year period of time, you got a correlation there. And the Coca-Cola people aren't going to tell you that, and why should they? I mean, if I was selling Coca-Cola, I wouldn't tell you that either. Now, there was an interesting guy on the other day. I got a tape in here from one of my students, and it's the guy who's the heir to the Baskin-Robbins. His name is Robbins, and his dad and his dad's business partner both died from eating Baskin-Robbins ice cream. I think Baskin-Robbins ice cream tastes great. It's wonderful stuff, and if I eat ice cream, I like Haagen-Dazs ice cream, and God, I love Baskin-Robbins 31. Now, here's the problem. Whenever you're making ice cream in this country, the United States of America has to be made with pasteurized cream, pasteurized milk. As a result of that, you lose the enzymes. Without the enzymes, you can't digest it. If you can't digest it, the fat goes right through your stomach lining and lodges in your arteries and gives you, or arteries, and gives you atherosclerosis. Plugs up your arteries with plaque. That's the problem with it. It isn't ice cream per se, it's pasteurized ice cream. That's what's killing us. Now, we make ice cream here. We got an ice cream freezer, one of these electric models, and you put a little ice in there and you make up this little brew, and you use whole eggs, fresh eggs right out of the hen house. You use cream, comes right out of our cows here. You put the flavorings in, and you know, you can make ice cream. Good for you. Good for you. Got all the enzymes in it. You can digest it. You aren't lactose intolerant. And as a matter of fact, it doesn't taste as good, and I don't like it near as well as I do Baskin-Robbins or Haagen-Dazs, but then I want to tell you, it's a hell of a lot more healthy. And I can't get it as hard, I can't get it as, you know, as firm as Baskin-Robbins, but the Baskin-Robbins kills you. And the partner to Baskin-Robbins died from eating the ice cream, and the kid said that in his youth he was always sick. He had all the ice cream he could eat, and he was always sick, and it made him wonder. So when he became an adult, he stopped eating Baskin-Robbins, and his health was restored. And that's the heir. That's the guy that owns Baskin-Robbins. And he says, hey, listen, the product that we sell at Baskin-Robbins is bad for your health and it's probably going to kill you. It killed my dad and it killed his partner. They didn't live to be 70 years old. And if you don't live to be 70, then you got cut off. You broke some laws. You have a breach of contract. Remember, you're always entitled to 70 years, 25,550 days. And for you to end up with less than 70 years of life, boys and girls, you got to break some laws. So tuck that one away in your heart. I got to give you a final reminder, and then we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about this thing of diabetes and how you can avoid it. And we'll talk about diet. What is it that you should be eating? What shouldn't you be eating? You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling site. That is the webpage, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. And until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.